On this week's Of Record, we have drone drops, Twitter is relevant again, and TikTok ads of the future.
Of Record is a podcast focused on the marketing and advertising industry from the perspective of industry expert Joe Clements. Joe Clements is a co-founder of Strategic Digital Services, a digital marketing firm based in Tallahassee, Florida, and founded in 2014.
I'm Joe Clements, and this is the podcast Of Record. Hey, everybody. Good to be back with you again on this week's Of Record. In the studio, we have co-host Kirsten.
Hi.
Great job, Kirsten. Way to make that less awkward than usual. Thank you. And producer Alex.
Hey.
Wow.
Good. We're getting the sound effects, you know, over the course of the last year. The stingers are really coming online.
Oh, yeah.
We're able to hit one at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. Eventually, I want you just to be able to, like, DJ freestyle it into the middle of when we're talking.
True.
So, I guess in the news, there's really no point in starting or ending with anything else than the Twitter saga, Twitter epic, Twitter, what do you want to call
it's
the Twitter story? Odyssey?
Yeah.
So, you know, this story, every time I look at it, there's something new. It's breaking minute by minute. Elon Musk is literally restructuring a company that's undergoing the online version of reality TV show.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. What were you just telling me was going on? There was a Doja Cat, Elon Musk.
Doja Cat changed her name to Christmas.
As one would.
And she said, "Help, Elon Musk. She was like, I don't want to be Christmas forever. And then, you know, he let her change her name again. She made herself Elon Musk, and then he switched her to Fart.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
It's just, that's pretty much a great example of what is happening on Twitter right now.
Yeah, so what it looks like is happening on Twitter is just everybody is testing the boundaries.
Yeah.
You know what it is? It's like substitute teacher day. So, like, the normal teacher, old Twitter, is now gone, and there's substitute teacher Elon, and everybody's seeing what the boundaries are.
Yeah, that's actually a great analogy on what is going on. So, and the substitute teacher is kind of enjoying it and is, like, throwing it back at them.
The substitute teacher is there for the chaos.
Yeah, exactly. They're getting paid regardless.
I heard somebody say they think what's going on here is Elon Musk is running some sort of Hegelian dialectic plan. So action, reaction, response. So essentially you take an action that you know is going to cause that, you know, this big problem, like this big outrage. Or problem, reaction, solution is what it technically is. Mm-hmm. So you do something that creates a problem. You let all the people go crazy with their hair on fire, and then you propose a response, a solution that is far more extreme than you ever would have been allowed to do in the beginning. But everybody goes along with it.
And that will be...
I think it's more intense identity verification.
Yeah, that's what
I think. It's very intense identity verification. Going back to last week's episode where we talked about that the whole play is, you know, make this thing... you know, the internet's passport, essentially, to prove your identity. I did hear another interesting idea. You know, he wanted to put $5 in everybody's Twitter account, and then you could send that money in any portion to any other Twitter user. And so making this, and we've talked about this a little bit before, that we thought this was the future of how crypto would work with content and social media, where essentially your consumption of that person's content is what pays for it, not advertising.
Yeah.
And so his idea is put like $5 in everybody's verified accounts, and then they can pass that to whoever they want to on Twitter for whatever reason they want.
This is a weird way to fund a new terrorist organization, but I'm on board, I guess.
Well, but no, remember, in order to take that money off of Twitter, you'd have to verify your identity.
So that's what we're kind of seeing a issue with, though, is that people are getting the verified badges and they're posing as senators and they're posing as companies. And, you know, that's what the chaos has been a lot of on Twitter lately is that people
Do you know anybody who's done the Twitter blue verification? I know they suspended it late last week and they're trying to get it back up this week. What are they actually asking you for?
I haven't done it.
I haven't done it either.
And I don't know anyone who does it. Okay, I saw someone equate this. This is going to probably give it the explicit warning, so fair warning.
Producer Alex, can you Google that, find out what they're actually asking for? Thank you.
Someone said that if you admit that you have Twitter blue, you're basically admitting that you like purchase porn. It's like the same level of embarrassment.
So I think part of what's going on there is, you know, who is the biggest loser if anybody can be verified?
If anyone could be verified?
If anybody can be verified, who are the biggest losers?
Twitter?
No. The blue checks who are already verified are the biggest losers because they lose their exclusivity status the platform. And of the blue checks, who benefits most from having that exclusivity status?
I'm going to say a wrong answer, but I think it's the people, like other users.
Other journalists, reporters, the people in the media. Mm. Because so much of the media itself is driven by what's happening on Twitter. And right. So one of the things going on in the background of keeping this in the news cycle is the media benefits most from having the old school Twitter blue check mark going. By letting all the plebs in to get the check mark, you lose that mark of status. And so I think part of what's going on here is this digital status protection.
Yeah.
Has direct monetary value if you are in the media. If you work as a journalist, your number of Twitter followers and engagements is directly related to how many people will read any of your stories mm-hmm. and how many people will book you for interviews to promote your next book.
Yeah. Darn, you just made me lose my thought. I had it and I don't remember what I was going to. Oh, well, that's why a lot of people that have had the blue check marks are the ones that are the loudest against it.
Yeah.
Because they're losing at what
their status.
Yeah. So like Stephen King is a great example of being someone who is like, I'm not going to use Twitter anymore if I don't have my status, essentially.
Yeah. Which is, you know, so I think you're getting this moral appliance of, oh no, it'll be anything goes on Twitter. What is actually going on is they're putting a moral appliance over what is a very status-driven, self-interested, keeping the circle small.
Mm-hmm. Alex, did you find the info at all?
I don't know if they deactivated it or not. It's very hard to follow the directions.
Oh, that's scary.
Yeah, they did shut it down late last week, and they're trying to get it up by the end of this week again.
Okay.
But look, what I have not heard people saying that you had to send your driver's license or social security number, or that they were even matching up what's on a credit card to an ID. I have a feeling what they're going to do is problem reaction solution. I think what they're going to do for nobody's verified is like, oh, okay, well, here's how we're going to fix it. We're going to do a full financial institution style, know your customer, KYC validation. We talked about this last week too, where it's two forms of identity. So it's a driver's license and a social security number or like a bill, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that you're right. I think you're spot on that. It's like, you know, he almost wanted this chaotic, like everyone's screaming and running around. Doja Cat's like, I don't want to be Christmas no more. And to be like, hold on. Here's the solution, which was always going to be what was going to happen kind of regardless.
You know, then we have the story of advertisers, you know, Group M, which is a big media buyer, is telling advertisers that Twitter is a, quote, high risk media buy. NBC Universal's CMO is, you know, generally supportive of Elon Musk, so he's got people there. There's some reports that 20 to 30% of Twitter's follower, or 20 to 30% of Twitter's big brands aren't committing their ad buys, that they're on the sidelines. Starlink did, however, make a big buy on Twitter.
Shocking.
You have competitor electric car companies saying that Twitter's rejecting their ads.
Oh, wow. I didn't think about that part. Hmm.
So my guess is that this is more chaotic than Elon Musk was planning for.
I agree.
But my guess is also that it was planned, it was assumed this was going to be more than a little chaotic, because he knew going in what the culture was inside of Twitter. And if you look at his reasons for telling investors when he was raising the money to go do the buy, hey, I can make this profitable. So he was critical of how fat the headcount was. He was critical of the culture inside the company, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So he knew there was going to be drama.
He knew there was going to be a level of chaos regardless. I don't think he knew what that level was going
to
hit.
I'll tell you another thing he's done, low-key seems to have happened. This is the first time in a long time I can remember Twitter was itself, not somebody said something on Twitter, but that Twitter itself was at the top of the topic of conversation.
Well, you said that a couple weeks ago, I think, that you were like, no one talks about Twitter itself. Yeah. And you're right.
And now, like, I don't know, I got TikTok stories in here, but now all of a sudden it's Twitter, 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 Twitter. That's mm-hmm. all anybody's talking about is Twitter.
Yeah.
And even if the advertisers are pulling back off of it, advertisers are, they'll go to where the eyeballs are. And if the eyeballs and interest stay on Twitter, the ads will creep back into Twitter if that is the direction that Elon Musk decides to take the company.
Yeah.
Well, that said, a lot of the jobs that were cut, I read, were the brand teams at Twitter who are responsible for managing those relationships with advertisers. So another indicator that maybe they really don't care that much about the advertising revenue.
Right.
Hmm.
So that I am actually shocked at how much Twitter news, risk of serious breach at Twitter, very high, even though I don't know what a data breach would
look like in Twitter. I'm one of those like people that's like, what else is going on?
All these gotcha people registering fake names, like, so.
Mm-hmm.
So any other Twitter thoughts, ideas? Elon Musk, Twitter. You know, I think in a few months they're launching the Falcon Super Heavy, I think it's called, or Starship Super Heavy. So this guy's doing this at the same time they're launching a bigger spaceship.
Did they ever launch Artemis?
No.
Oh.
I keep bringing up things I said in the past, but glad I called that one a long time ago.
This is a big full circle episode for you.
Yeah, I think they're just hoping it blows up at this point so they don't have to do it anymore.
That,
yeah.
The hurricane was gonna knock it over. I'd be like, whoops.
Yeah, in fact, I did read that they said it sustained, like, you know, some damage, but they were gonna try it anyway. Something to that effect.
Oh my gosh.
Elon Musk is sabotaging it.
He sent the hurricane with the Starlink satellites.
With the Starlink satellites, the weather satellites.
Exactly.
That control the weather.
I'm looking up Artemis now. When are they actually going to launch this thing?
So while you're looking up that, some TikTok news. So out of Semaphore, ByteDance's TikTok formally began testing its e-commerce feature, TikTok Shop, in the United States late last week, allowing users to make purchases directly through the app instead of rerouting them through third-party sites.
I like that.
Have you seen that?
I haven't seen it, no, but I do like that.
You're the type of person who'd buy crap on TikTok.
I do buy crap off TikTok. I mean, well, I buy things from ads I see on TikTok because, like I've said before on this podcast, that I like that my ads are very tailored on TikTok. They're all things I'd actually probably use. A lot of times I don't even realize I'm watching an ad until it stops. And I'm like, what? I'm like, I genuinely think it's a product that, like, is going to change my life. I don't have anything against the old way of shopping because you just tap, like, shop now or whatever, and it takes you to the website. But if you, let's say, could plug in your credit card information to TikTok and have the shop pop up right there and I could purchase it right there, that would make things a whole lot more convenient. Because, you know, if you ever try to buy something through, like, Instagram, you have to, like...
The browser sucks inside that.
Yeah, you have to, like, open it up in Safari, and that's where all your information's stored and stuff. So if TikTok can get a handle on that, it would make things buying a little bit easier. I think that's something Amazon should also look at, too.
Oh, we're going to get to Amazon. Mm. I should have reversed these stories, because that would have been a great transition.
Sorry.
Because Amazon's in the news a lot the last week. So the other TikTok story... is out of the New York Times. TikTok builds itself into an ads juggernaut. The Chinese-owned video app's ad business is thriving, even as digital advertising slump hurts Meta, Snap, and other rivals. Not news. We've talked about this for probably 2 years. That TikTok is going to very quickly be the number three or four advertiser in the country.
Right.
You know, probably in the world.
Yeah.
It's soaking up ad revenues, not just out of social media, but I think out of TV as well.
Yeah, I agree.
What have you seen recently in TikTok advertising trends that's notable?
Notable would be the key word there, because I don't know if I've seen any ads that are extremely, like, standout-ish. I mean, we've talked about the ads that are, like, that blend in as content is, like, kind of how a lot of ads are done on... They do use their influencers a little bit more. A couple more people I've actually followed get, like, brand deals, and they'll just be, like, talking about something, and I think I'm just watching my usual daily content with that person, and I see it sponsored on the bottom.
Yeah.
I don't know, Alex, have you seen anything, like, groundbreaking with the ads?
Groundbreaking, no, but definitely creators are making their ads blend into content.
I think, you know, it took Facebook... You know, it may have been 2016, 2017 when I felt Facebook advertising was becoming really sophisticated and its own sort of content formula, which is how we built a lot of this business, was being good at selling things on Facebook.
Yeah.
But Facebook really did work differently than TV or radio or search or YouTube. It is because of the combination of assets on Facebook. So you had your post text, you had your video, your graphic, you had the little button, a description, and your call to action. So the combination of those things tended to make Facebook unique in how you sold products. Mm-hmm. Instagram had its own way of selling products. What I haven't seen, I see the early phases of this on TikTok, but I don't yet see the quintessential, like, what in 3 or 4 years are people going to view as, like, oh, that is a TikTok ad. Like, what becomes the stereotype of the TikTok ad?
Oh, the stereotype, I feel like, is definitely where it's like, you guys, you won't believe this. I got the best clear skin of my life. If you know me, I struggled with acne my whole life. And like, you think that you're kind of just watching, like, for a secret almost, like, how most TikTok kind of are. And then they're like, I just had to use Proactive or something like that. And you're like, what the heck? Am I watching a Proactive ad? So I feel like a lot of the ads, that's almost like the cliche of a TikTok ad.
You guys.
Like, I get this ad, and I just actually recently started getting this for a Spider-Man soap. Have you gotten this one at all?
Yeah.
It's a bar of soap that's just cute. It's branded, like, the box is branded Spider-Man themed, but it's just soap. Like, a bar of soap. And people are like, I can't believe it, guys. It's in stock. I have been waiting so long to get this. It's the, like, or, like, they always kind of start with that hook. Yeah. Like, it's scarce. I finally in stock. It's a holy grail. Like, that's kind of like.
Okay, so it's the multi-level marketing.
Kind of,
sales genre, essentially, is how it's working.
Yeah.
Somebody who looks like they're personally making an appeal to you. There's a scarcity appeal in it. There's a little known, you won't believe it appeal to it. I think that is a trope that will not have staying power, because it's only working because it's doing a cheat on the front end of the ad. What ultimately ended up making Facebook ads work well is they became very, very direct. Set, you know, 20% off, get these cool, ugly Christmas sweaters before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Pictures of the Christmas sweaters.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That became what worked really well on Facebook, was just being direct.
Yeah, ships overnight. Like,
yeah. And we ran a lot of campaigns where we'd test like very creative, very clever content versus the direct. And the direct message won almost all the time, you know, maybe 90% plus of the time. So I think that thing on TikTok, that indirect hook, which is a little bit misleading, will eventually wane because they're signaling to you at the very beginning that this is a misleading ad.
I was going to say, well, because now when I get those, and as soon as it starts off with, oh my God, you guys, you won't believe, I like scroll because I know what it's going to be immediately. Mm-hmm. Or like whenever it starts off with like, hey girl, let me tell you something. Like, I'm like, no, because I already know you're trying to sell me something. Like, it's like those, like that first 2 seconds, I would say, you can tell so quick if it's that cliche, like, guys, it's finally in stock. Like,
part of me believes because TikTok is imitating that the time amount people spend on it is much closer to TV than anything else, that where TikTok will land will be something closer to the way cable television ads work right now.
Yeah.
Which is 15 to 30 seconds, fast moving, slick graphics, showing the product being used, call to action at the end. And maybe a more direct call to action if you can buy it right there.
Yeah.
But I struggle to see that TikTok's ads that work best are going to be those influencer type deals for the most part, because they also don't scale. There's a limited number of influencers. It's a long time to get them set up, say what you want. So there's also no scale in that.
And they have to stay out of trouble. The influencers almost always will end up in jail for something, or like they've done some horrible crime. So you have to pick your people carefully and then hope that they remain a good person.
Yeah. Big ad money is you want to put your message next to the content that people want to see without taking responsibility for the content they're seeing.
Yeah.
I think the ads might change to something different, more like a subtle background ad placement. Like, oh, like this product is in the background and there might be like a little featured section at the bottom corner of the screen where you click on it and it's like, oh, what products were in this video?
How do you scale that?
Anybody would be able to tag the products in their video. And then if somebody follows that link to the website for the product and buys it, then...
How do I, as the advertiser... So that's referral marketing. How do I, as the advertiser, if I wanted to spend $1 million on TikTok, how do I deploy $1 million of that ad? And how do I do it where I'm not reaching out to that person and trying to mail 1,000 people product?
Maybe if your product is tagged, you can look at all the top performing videos that include it, and you might be able to just select a few and deploy money to boost that.
To boost those. And I think Facebook has tried similar things.
Yeah, you can tag the
product. How do I launch a new product?
That one's more tough.
Yeah.
That reminds me a lot of the app that women will use. It's called Like to Know. Have you ever heard of it?
Mm-mm.
It's a lot of influencers like fashionistas and stuff like that will use it. And it's like they'll just make like a video of themselves. And instead of answering all the questions of what lipstick shade are you wearing? Where'd you get that couch from? Oh, I like that vase. They just put all the items on the Like to Know It app on their profile, and you can just buy it directly, a link right to the website wherever they got that. So a lot of people will do that for their outfits, their makeup, the home decor, instead of sitting there being like, oh, my tree's from here. And oh, the shade of paint on my walls is this. Like, they just list it out and people can just collect it all in one place, which is an interesting thing. I used to be against it for the longest time.
Yeah.
I caved because I was really interested.
That helps, doesn't scale very well.
No,
if I want to launch a new product. Yeah. And that's how TikTok, if they sell ads, that's what they need to get into.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what's the answer?
I mean, my gut is it's going to look a lot closer to TV than anything has previously that's been successful in social media world.
So like running like TV commercial ads, are you thinking?
Well, it's got to be shot in vertical.
Yeah.
Right? You know, and it's more targeted. But I think you're going to see, I think the ads will get slicker and higher production value.
Yeah.
Over time.
I don't know about that. I'm 50-50 with it because I think people really disregard the high production value. Like it's again, like you see it, you immediately can register. This is an ad. I don't want to watch this. If
so it's good. You're thinking like high production value in terms that it looks like it could be on like a Super Bowl ad or an NFL TV ad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm saying high production value in terms that it looks like it was shot by a very well-funded content company. So let's say you're advertising trucks. Let's say you're advertising Dodge Ram,
mm-hmm.
right? So what you're going to do is you're not just, you know, you're going to have the guy like the new 2023 Dodge yeah. Ram pushing cattle around. It's not going to be like that with the announcer. What you'll have is you'll have the truck doing something interesting or crazy or noteworthy, but filmed in the way that like, you know, Red Bull might produce a piece of content or
like a high-end YouTube channel kind of
like stuff. A high-end YouTube channel.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
No, I like that. I think that's good. Yeah, if you got like a truck, it's like, let's see this truck run over 20 watermelons. I'd be like, I need to get a Ram.
Yeah.
I'm not crushing watermelons, yeah. but like, man, that was cool.
Or how, you know, how many pumpkins can this truck carry?
I mean, like, yeah, Red Bull kind of does that with the GoPro thing every yeah. year. And it's like, God, I need to get a GoPro. It's like, how many times are you jumping out of a spaceship back to the planet? Like, anyway.
You're not. So on the topic of buying stuff, Amazon is, I'm actually going to save, for those of you listening this far, we're going to record our holiday shopping episode, which we'll release next week. But I actually just see a piece I'm going to save for that. But Amazon, there's some debate in the Wall Street Journal. How many people are watching Thursday Night Football? That is up for debate. It is somewhere between 10 million and 12 million. Which is a significant difference, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's really good, I think.
Just anecdotally, have noticed a lot of people talking about Thursday Night Football, even though the games are largely trash.
You know what I actually was thinking when I was watching Thursday Night the last week was, I actually like the personalities they put on the panel for this. Like Fitzpatrick's a really funny guy. Like I really like watching them all like talk. I never watch after shows ever, and I always watch the Thursday Night one now. I don't know why, but their banter, the commentating is so much more normal.
Uh-huh.
Like it's more real. I really look forward to Thursday Night. I think I look forward to it more than other night, like Monday or Sunday.
What have you seen in the, are they doing anything unique with the ads? I don't think I've watched a Thursday Night game yet. Any like click here to buy the jersey?
No, I haven't seen any of that yet. Mm. It's been pretty standard, like normal commercials, like nothing that like makes me like look up when I'm watching it.
So what that tells me though is the last 3 years, I think it was on NFL Network,
mm-hmm.
correct? And really struggled. But Amazon picking it up on Amazon Prime has at least given it better reach than NFL Network had.
Yeah.
For sure.
I mean, even like the small things. I mean, this is what I like football
And Amazon,
for.
By the way, promotes the crap out of it. Every time yeah. I go on Amazon, there's the banner.
Yeah. The after show thing, they usually, they'll bring out one of the players that was like a star. And when, I think it was the Eagles, was it? Yeah, it was the Eagle fans that were like in the stands. There was like probably like 50 of them screaming about how they hated the Cowboys and stuff like that. But like it was so unscripted and just chaotic energy. But like Everyone on Twitter was talking about it. Everyone on Reddit was talking about it. I was laughing on my couch because these, like, drunk people in the stands were just, like, having a ball after the game. Like, I mean, showing little bits like that are so entertaining. I don't – it becomes more of, like, a – like being a fly on a wall situation than it is just being like a spectator watching it on TV, I guess. Like it's less coordinated. I don't know what it is, but I really like do enjoy Thursday night.
Just feels
night.
More organic.
Yes, that's yeah. the word I think I'm looking for. It's more organic. There's more funny things with the fans. The panel's more relatable, more fun, different personalities mingling together. Thursday night has pretty crappy games and They're kind of fun to watch now all of a sudden.
So, interesting, you know, other Amazon story is after 10 years, Amazon's new delivery drone will start delivering packages this year. This out of CNBC. It is going to drop them from 12 feet in the air. The drone, the MK27-2, will be making deliveries in Lockford, California and College Station, Texas by the end of 2022. It does object avoidance on its own. It is 5.5 feet in diameter. It weighs 80 pounds. It can only carry packages weighing less than 5 pounds. And it must fit in a box the size of a shoebox.
I'm looking at a picture of it right now. Oh, boy. How do you feel about this?
It can fly 12 kilometers round trip. Who knows how many miles that is? I certainly don't. I think it's like six.
Something like that.
Alex, yeah. Quickly, do the conversion on that.
I'm like, it looks like crazy. I'm like looking at pictures. Have you seen pictures of it?
Yeah.
It looks like a Ferris wheel. I don't know why it reminds me of that. So it dropped these 12 feet?
Yep.
7.45 miles.
Wow. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's a decent range.
Would you get your packages delivered via drone like that? 12 feet from the sky?
I can't. It depends on what it is.
How does it take into account? I mean, I guess they must...
Does it have like a little
shipping,
parachute?
Yeah, process. They must say like if you could drop it from 12 feet or not. Like, I'm like, I don't know. Even if I got like a book, like something that doesn't break from a fall, I still wouldn't want someone to
just
throw my crap. Yeah, like that. Like what if, and does it obstacle avoid when it drops?
Yes, it has obstacle avoidance. I don't know about the drop.
Obstacle, okay, I'm a drone pilot, and I'm going to be honest, the obstacle avoidance is not stellar on a lot of drones.
Yeah.
So I don't trust it personally, so that's, maybe it's different, maybe it's more high tech. It
flies 50 miles an hour, so it's fast.
Dude, if you got, oh my god, the birds are going to get nailed by this thing.
Nah, they'll be fine.
The yard squirrel's going to get squashed.
Yeah, the squirrels are going to get squashed. The squirrel squasher.
In like 3 years, they're going to be like, the bee population really took a hit when they started putting drones in the sky. Or something like that. I don't know. Imagine, yeah. I mean, like, what are you going to do when a bird does attack it? I mean, we know birds attack drones.
Oh, birds attack drones. This is big. This is a 6-foot diameter, so it's a bold bird going after something this big.
Didn't we just talk about chickens being so ruthless?
I guess if a chicken could get 12 feet up, a chicken might go after it.
I'm just saying, there's probably a couple birds out there that fly in the sky that would be willing to take on a 12-foot, whatever, 6-foot, whatever you just said, drone.
Yeah.
I'm dubious of this product.
So, me too. And it's only launching in two places, and I think it's delivering to relatively rural areas.
Do you think that this is just a gimmick thing for Amazon's using?
They wouldn't have spent 10 years doing it. And further, this out of the Wall Street Journal, Amazon in broad cost-cutting review weighs changes at Alexa and other unprofitable units. Alexa shows operating losses of $5 billion annually. So if it wasn't going to work, they may have already cut it.
That's true. They have a vision.
I mean,
visions for the sky.
I kind of wonder In my opinion, Alexa is the most effective voice computing hardware, software.
I agree.
Combination by a long shot. I wonder why they aren't making money on it.
Did they expect that more people would be using the Alexa to order from?
I think so.
I think that was probably the hard
hook. And they sold the hardware at a subsidy, mm-hmm. so they didn't sell the hardware at cost.
I don't think a lot of people vocally order
things.
Mm-mm. They even came out with those little button things that you could put, like, buy, like, your soap if you ran out. Mm-hmm. And those don't exist, I don't think, anymore. So even a physical thing like that doesn't work.
Because not many people are brand loyal these days.
Yeah, and, you know, we're so accustomed to going on our phone or the computer to order something.
Exactly.
It's like, can I get a, like, it's like getting money out of an ATM. I have to go to the ATM to get money. Like, I don't expect that I can go to McDonald's and, like, hug a, like, Ronald McDonald and I get a dollar. I don't know.
In that case, you know, why doesn't Amazon just require products have a QR code or even the UPC on the back, and then the Amazon, and maybe it already does this, the Amazon app just scans the UPC and adds it to your shopping list?
I don't know. They do already know if you should reorder something. Like, if you ordered, like, dish detergent, they would say, you probably are out right now. You want to reorder this? I wonder. I also would love to know how many people have things on subscription order on Amazon. Like,
true.
I have one thing on a subscription order. Do you guys?
Amazon has become much less reliable over the past 2 years than it ever was.
I used to get my cat food on Amazon, and then all of a sudden they'd be like, "It's gonna take 2 months." I was like,
"My cat will be dead."
Yeah, I was like, "Okay, well, I'm not gonna be paying for a subscription or like getting it every month, because if you're not gonna give it to me every month, I can just go to the pet store."
Let's do this exercise. What could be effectively sold via Alexa?
I'm thinking, because even they tried, like, Domino's Pizza with Alexa, and people don't even want to go, "Alexa, order me a pepperoni pie." What could be?
Maybe, like, Brita filters, like water filters.
It's just like, hey, you want me to order you some more water filters? Like, what is the thing that Amazon could sell with Alexa? And look, maybe it's not a physical product.
I genuinely, outside of music, am not sure what it could be. Music is the only thing that comes to my mind, is that when you want to listen to a song right there and mm-hmm. it says, hey, it's going to cost money or a subscription with, like, Prime Music, that would make me go, God, I just want to listen to that music while I cook or something like that. Like, in that moment, I need it.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can think of anything else. There's no book. There's no Christmas present. There's no skincare thing I could probably think of. No food. Do you have an idea?
I think it is a remarkably functional household appliance.
Mm-hmm.
Setting timers, playing music, asking what the weather is, having it read you the news. I think the best bet for them to make money off of it is just bundle it into Prime. So if you want to use Alexa, you need to have Prime.
Yeah, I think that's the... didn't they just do that with Prime Music? Didn't they just...
They just totally changed Prime Music to where they made it so if you don't... The free version, if you don't have the Amazon Music subscription, the free version is you don't select your song. It just randomly shuffles songs like the one you ask it for.
Right. Okay, gotcha.
Which my guess is they were losing money on having that free tier where it was just kind of open.
Yeah.
So, the other thing that stands out to me about Alexa is if Amazon keeps building into the automated home stuff more and more, they just bought Roomba, iRobot.
Mm.
It becomes useful for interplay with that.
Yeah. Remember when Alexa came out with the robot, that Arlo, that used to just, like, walk around, like, it'd roll around in your house and stuff like that, and could, like, take a picture and stuff like that? What a weird concept that was.
People were trying stuff, you know, back in the before times.
That was when everyone thought we'd be the Jetsons and like.
Yeah. And then COVID happened. Everybody's like, well, what if it just brought me toilet paper? Technology.
Maybe medicine. That would be the other thing, I think, that if you could just go, hey, refill my prescription.
Mm-hmm. Well, Amazon has Amazon Pharmacy.
That would probably be the other good one that it could do. Because that's something no one really likes to go to the store for, pick up, go through a drive-thru.
Good
and
point.
And a drone drops your pills right at your house.
From 12 feet up, you get the pill powder.
That's how I get my Zoloft.
From Aloft.
But going back to the people not being brand specific, I think if you could just select a couple different brands of, like, say, paper towels, and, like, say, Amazon, just give me the cheapest paper towels every month, and then boom, like, that's what the button would do.
Yeah.
That would be better.
Yeah.
Because you don't know if you're getting the best deal if you're ordering it from voice.
Mm-hmm. Can't visualize it.
Mm-hmm.
Give me that hard sandpaper toilet paper that chafes my butt. All right, anything else?
Don't drop my package from 12 feet.
Just get me back to 2-day shipping, please.
Yeah, that's all I wanted, man. I didn't want the drone. I just wanted normal shipping again.
All right, guys. Anything else you want to cover before we close out?
Mm-mm.
All right.
I think we're good.
Awesome. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. As always, if you liked it, please leave us a review. Until next time, this has been Of Record. Of Record is hosted by me, Joe Clements, with the assistance of producer Alex Reinhard. Of Record is produced at the Trailway Studio in Tallahassee, Florida. This episode was edited by producer Alex Reinhard. Our theme music is composed and performed by Rob Goki. Special thanks to our entire team here at SDS. You can see more information about the show on our website, podcastofrecord.com. As always, we'd appreciate your reviews and ratings in your podcast app of choice. These ratings and reviews help more people discover the show, which helps us keep delivering quality content each week. Thanks for listening.